Good. And so once again, good morning, brothers and sisters. And once again, welcome back, everybody. The Gospel of Luke is sometimes referred to as the Gospel of Mercy because it has so many stories, especially parables, of God's great mercy. The greatest of all of them, parable of the prodigal son. And that one we're going to hear in a couple months, give or take. But a real close second is the parable that we just heard, the parable of the Good Samaritan. Now, I know what you're thinking. The parable of the Good Samaritan is something you've heard so many times that it's almost, you know, it's almost just such a temptation just to tune it out. I bet you anything that most of you, if I called on you at random, you could recite the parable of the Good Samaritan from memory. But listen to this. There's a reason why we hear this parable again and again and again. You know what that reason is? It's because this parable is not vague moralizing about what we're supposed to do. This is a parable about what kind of person we're supposed to become. So be careful now. Don't tune it out. This is not vague moralizing about, you know, I should be nicer to people. I should be more thoughtful. I should be more generous. All that's true. But the real issue when we stand before God in judgment at the end of our lives is what kind of a person have you become? And that's what this parable is all about. Let's take a closer look, okay? Now, to understand the parable of the Good Samaritan, you really have to understand the background. You really have to understand the history of this. So the entire parable is occasioned by one simple question. Scholar of the law comes up to Jesus, and he asks, "Who is my neighbor?" Now, everybody heard the commandment, love your neighbor as yourself, right? Yes or yes? Yes, everybody's heard that. Well, they've all heard that in Jesus' time, too. But what's interesting is nobody knew what the commandment really meant because nobody was entirely sure what was meant by the word neighbor. Love your neighbor as yourself. Comes from the book of Leviticus. Here's the problem. Every time it shows up in the book of Leviticus, the word neighbor meant something a little bit different. First time it shows up, the word neighbor means your fellow Israelite, right, your countryman. Next time it shows up, the word neighbor means everybody in the whole world. Now that's a lot harder to live by. I remember once I was teaching, I think it was either first grade or second grade, and I asked my first graders, second graders, to write a prayer. And their prayers were absolutely hilarious. One of these is, here's one of them. And it says, "Dear God, it must be hard to love everybody in the entire world. There's only four people in my family, and I can't do it. So it's much, much harder to love everybody and a lot easier to love your countrymen. So the question is, who's my neighbor?" the scholar of the law asks Jesus. And Jesus answers in the last way anyone would ever expect by teaching them this magnificent parable. A man was walking the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. The road from Jerusalem to Jericho is the most dangerous road in the entire country. Here's why. Because in the span of just a few miles, it climbs 3,500 feet in elevation. Narrow road, lots of switchbacks, lots of... If you've ever been to Israel and you've gone from Jerusalem to Jericho, you probably drove on this great big broad highway. Well, that was built in 1964. If you ever get to go to Israel, the Promised Land, try to file this one away and act on it. Ask your tour guide if he'll show you the original Jerusalem to Jericho road. And then this parable will come alive. Narrow, winding roads, a ravine on one side, a cliff on the other side. And that made that road a perfect setting for crime. People always traveled Jerusalem to Jericho in caravans so they could have safety in numbers. Nobody was foolhardy enough to walk this path alone. So Jesus says this parable, a long walk to man alone, Jerusalem to Jericho. And we all know what's going to happen next. He's going to get attacked. And lo and behold, he does get attacked. Then along come three characters, two good guys and one bad guy. The two good guys, priest and the Levite, And everybody knew the bad guy was the Samaritan. Did you remember, have you heard this before? Jews and Samaritans hated each other with an ethnic hatred that stretched back 600 years. They wouldn't look one another in the eye. They wouldn't set foot in one another's territory. I can't think of any modern parallel of that ethnic hatred in our own country, in our 600 years. And so they thought, well, certainly this is going to be the bad guy. But then everybody surprised us to see what happens. The priest and the Levite, they see the poor man left for dead on the road, and they pass far by on the opposite side. Why don't they lift a finger to help this poor man who's dying on the side of the road? Well, let's look at each case. The priest might well have been going from Jericho up to Jerusalem to offer incense in the temple. Did you know that in Israel in the time of Jesus, there were so many priests that you might wait an entire lifetime for one chance to go to the temple and offer incense? It was like the honor of a lifetime. However, if you had contact with a dead body, you were ritually impure for 7 days. If you had contact with a dead body, or even brushed up against a tombstone, even by accident, ritually impure for 7 days. So the priest sees this guy lying on the road. He's not sure if he's alive or dead. What's he doing? He's playing it safe, staying far, far away. And then next along comes a Levite. What the heck is a Levite anyway? You know what a Levite is? A Levite is somebody who assisted the priest in the temple. They were craftsmen, they were musicians, they were gatekeepers. They had a number of functions. Well, he's not going to offer incense in the temple. Why does he walk far away from the poor man? Well, turns out that sometimes criminals would lie in wait like decoys, just in case someone bent down to help the man pretending to be dead. All of his buddies waiting up in the hills would come down and ambush them all. So the Levite, is it safe? Walks along on the other side. And then comes the bad guy, right? Then comes the Samaritan. Everybody says, all of this. This guy's probably going to rifle through his pockets. But what does he do? He stops down. He helps the poor man. He pours oil. He pours wine on his wounds. Why wine and oil? Wine acts like a disinfectant, right? With the alcohol content. Oil soothes the pain. So he cares for the poor man's injury. He cares for the poor man's comfort. Hoists him on the back of his own animal. Takes him to the Holiday Inn and leaves the credit card. Right? And Jesus asked, which of these three was neighbor to the robber's victim? And the scholar of the law can barely bring himself to say the word Samaritan. So he mumbles, oh, the one who treated him with mercy. And what Jesus says to him, Jesus says to you and to me as well, go now and do the same. Now, let me ask you this. Can you think of anybody in your life who you would treat the way the Samaritan treated that poor man? Think about this. You're doing it at your own expense, at your own risk, setting aside plans that you might have had years in the making, and all of this for somebody who got in trouble because of his own stupid fault. Can you think of anybody who you would treat like that? Your own risk, your own expense, set aside years of plans for somebody who, quite frankly, deserved it because they were so reckless. Answer? Yes. But you would have to love that person very, very much, wouldn't you? And that is the kind of person we are supposed to become. That's what this parable is all about. One day, every last one of us is going to breathe his last, close his eyes, and die. And they say that, you know, it's going to come like a thief in the night. You're walking along, you're doing your thing. Next thing you know, you're standing before the judgment seat of God, and you're answering for all the questions, all the choices that you made in your life. What kind of a life do you want to be leading? What kind of a life? The answer is, you want to do what Jesus himself would do if Jesus were living in your shoes. That's the kind of life we want to live. That's the kind of people we want to become. Now, how do we do that? How do we do that? A couple of things. First, and simplest, This is what the spiritual life is all about. This is why we pray. This is why we go to confession. This is why we go to Mass. This is why we receive the Eucharist. You can't do this on your own. You ever heard it said that you're made in the image and likeness of God? You've heard that before, yes? You know what it means? Here's what it means. God's image. That means intellect and will. That means you have a mind and you have a heart. You have a mind that can know the truth, and you have a heart that can choose to love. That sets you apart from every other creature in this world. You're not like the plants, you're not like the animals. Only a human being is made in God's image. But God's likeness, do you know what that means? That means divine grace. Only when you're powered by grace from above can you act in such a self-forgetful way. It's the first thing we need to keep in mind, but here's the second, and this one's more challenging. We need to remember that our actions are cumulative. They all matter. They all add up. Every choice we make forms our character. Have you heard this said before? Sow an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap an identity. Sow an identity, reap a destiny. Every action that we make matters. And what that means is, if you ever really do want to act like the Good Samaritan would act, the way that we do that is that we start making little choices right now and building habits. If you haven't built those habits, you're going to act like the priest, you're going to act like the Levite. Little story just to illustrate. You ever heard of St. Maximilian Kolbe? I'm just curious. Raise your hand if you know who St. Maximilian Kolbe is. Okay, good number of people. A few don't. For the sake of those who don't, let me just tell you the story. St. Maximilian Kolbe, one of my favorite saints, died a martyr's death in 1941. He was a prisoner in Auschwitz in the Second World War. And long story short, a prisoner escaped from Auschwitz prison in 1941. Nazis never figured out who it was. So what they decided to do was to punish the entire prison camp. And they lined up all the prisoners, and every 10th person was slated to die in the starvation bunker. And they counted them off, 7, 8, 9. And if you were number 10, they'd throw you into a room, lock the door until you starved to death. So they called out number 10, and the poor man, he falls to his knees, and he says, "I've got to live. I can't die. I promised my wife and my children I would survive this place." Maximilian Kolbe, Catholic priest, he steps forward. He says, "I'll take his place. I'll die in his place if you let him live." Nazi guard was nonplussed. He said, "Who do you think you are?" And Father Kolbe said, "I am a Catholic priest, and I died the day I was ordained. Now." What's interesting about that story, when they were canonizing Maximilian Kolbe in the 80s, they called forth witnesses who knew about him, knew about his life. They called forth this man. They said, "Here's what happened at Auschwitz. What do you think? Does that fit Father Kolbe's character?" And he goes, "That's exactly Father Kolbe." He goes, "Really?" He goes, "Oh yeah. Doesn't surprise me in the slightest. He always did stuff like that. It was just the way he was. He always chose whatever was good for you, no matter what it cost him. Doesn't surprise me in the slightest." How did he act like such a hero? He chose it one decision at a time. It's very, very unlikely that you're ever going to be called upon to do anything so heroic. It's very unlikely that you're going to find yourself in a circumstance like the Good Samaritan and the poor guy on the road. But if you do, the only way that you will act like Jesus would act is if you build that habit one choice at a time right now. So an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap an identity. Sow an identity, reap a destiny. You see now why we need to hear this parable over and over and over again? What our Lord says to the scholar of the law, he says to you and me as well. Go now and do the same. And there's no better place in all the world to do that than right here. And there's no better time than right now.